Guys, welcome back for episode 2 review of Star Trek Discovery, season 5 episode 2. We were going to do them back to back, Gray, but it ended up being too long the first episode because we talk a lot, and we were trying the live format, but it's I'm not going to bother with the live format. I'll keep that for gaming, I think, possibly. Not that it makes a big difference. So if you're watching episode 1, thank you for coming back again for episode 2. Probably won't be as long this one. They just happened to show these back-to-back, Gray. I don't think that was a good idea, showing both episodes back-to-back, because we're starved of Star Trek for so long. So right. giving it all to us in a shorter span means they run out of content quicker.
What was the episode length this time? I forgot. What did they say?
They are closer to... I don't remember... Yeah, I think it was like 59 minutes for the first episode and something like maybe 53 for the second. So they are longer than usual, but we'll only get 10 episodes. Whereas
the number of episodes, right?
Yeah, it's less.
Down, right?
Season one was 15 episodes. So I'm kind of gutted, man. I've got some Romulan ale. Just to show that. There you go. I'll share.
Romulade instead of Gatorade.
Romulade. Oh dearie me, it's got a long episode. Yeah, so like we don't have as much for the second episode because it kind of rolled in, but it was too long to do it in the first one. So Mr. Great, we kick off pretty much going straight into episode 2. We see those progenitors again, and you mentioned this in the last episode. The progenitors do look a bit like the changelings, don't they? Very much like the changelings.
Very much like the changelings.
Like an earlier, shitter version of the changelings without their makeup on. Which I found very, very interesting, to be honest with you. They were in Star Trek The Next Generation, we said before, season 6, episode 20. That was before the changelings were a thing. So I'm glad it was in that order, Gray, because that would have caused confusion if it was the other way about. Yeah. So when they went to create the changelings in Deep Space Nine, I wonder what they were thinking. They must have copied that idea.
Unless the changelings were a first offspring of the progenitors, I guess, in a sense.
That would make sense.
And then they went about on their own. That would be an easy way to explain it, I guess, why they look so much like them, I suppose.
Do you recall, I know we touched on it in the last episode, do you recall this episode, sorry, the TNG episode 20 in season 6, from what's your memory like of that?
I have to go back and see it, but the only things that I remember or was reading about was that the progenitors apparently were like an ancient first race, so to speak. And so this race went around and noticed that there wasn't a whole lot of other races around. So they decided that they would just seed planets with part of their DNA and let them do whatever happened. Thus, the idea that part of the DNA then just did whatever it did and turned into a bunch of different species. But technically, many, many people, maybe not everybody, but many or almost all the species that we know in Star Trek have all got some little DNA somewhere of the progenitors. But the episode was more about the plague that the progenitors started trying to make themselves better, and that in them wiping out the Xeno plague or whatever, the Xeno people or species that came out of it, they were able to wipe them out.
Not to be confused with Aliens the movie or Alien the movie.
Right. But it ended up destroying their whole civilization except for maybe one or two progenitors. So
interesting.
Thinking about that story maybe now gives you some clues as to where they're going in Discovery with this, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So I guess the reason they want that don't want this to fall into the bad guy's hands, so to speak, is that if they were to release a new plague or a new species, that we could all be annihilated, something like that.
Yeah, Gray done a little bit of research before and between episode 1 and 2 reviews that we're doing there while he was setting up episode 2. So thank you, Gray, because I remember them vaguely, but just vaguely. It's those kind of super species, as I call them, that are fascinating. We see them and not only Star Trek, but we see them in science fiction a lot. We got the planet builders from Stargate Universe, who were fascinating. You have a couple of species in Star Trek that were... there's obviously the... What's his name?
Or like the Guardian Q of Continuum.
Forever. Yeah, the Guardian of Forever was one entity. But and then you see the species that had the portals. I can't remember what they were called again. The portals around the galaxy. That was a brilliant episode of TNG. So you see many examples of this. I'd love it. When
In Babylon 5, they had a race called the First Ones.
The First Ones?
First ones, and they were just a race of maybe 5 or 6 different races, and those 5 or 6 races begat all the other races, you know, and stuff.
Interesting. But yeah, this could go really well or really poorly. We're just hoping that they actually manage to do it justice, but it is Discovery, so I'm a little bit concerned. Gray, you're not a fan of this piggybacking off of Picard season 3.
No,
but they're not piggybacking, though. What do you mean?
The progenitors look like the changelings.
That's
said
not
right
the
there.
Changelings' fault.
but if you're going to do something,
first. They came first.
That's nice, but the point is that it just looks too much alike, and it just seems to be like they're just, I don't know. I wish they would have come up either with a new race and or dive back into Star Trek and try to find something else that they could have used. But when you see the change, the first thing I thought of as soon as I saw the progenitor was, I'm going like, really? Wait a minute. We just had the changelings. We just did a whole thing on that. And now you're dragging this back into the story? What? If you think about it, we don't have time to really ponder on it now, but if you think about some of the stuff that you've seen over the years in Star Trek that you think would be cool to bring back, come on, I could think of a few things probably that would have been cool. But be that as it may, it just seemed like a perfect ploy to make... look, they put the progenitor like big as the screen. You mean to tell me that no one is going to notice that they look like the changelings? Come on.
Well, a lot of things would spin from the progenitors. That, like you say, if they're the first species and the changelings are pretty advanced compared to normal humanoids, it's kind of normal that that's a normal line of progression and evolution. So we'll see. But they happen to look very similar to them, but I think it could go well.
If you're going to do that, you might as well brought back Khan again then.
Not again. Not again, no.
Oh, see what you just said? Not again, no.
The last one we get scarred. Nothing to do with Benedict Cumberbatch. He's brilliant, but just no Kelvin universe in the bin. So yes, we do have the presenters back, and the whole concept of this story arc could be amazing. We are getting very much Indiana Jones vibes from this, as we see later on in this episode as well. That are, again, I touched on this last episode, it could be really great or really crap. I hope it's really great, to be honest with you.
A de-aged indie show up?
No de-aging, no. Captain Rayner is getting into trouble for basically not doing it as he was told in the first episode. He kind of went off script a little bit, AWOL, and Burnham was a bit pissed off of him, to be fair. They are getting a grilling by Vance, the Federation president. I don't know why she's sticking her nose in. She was.
If I remember correctly, she's the president of Earth, I think. Not just, you know, part of Starfleet.
I'm sure she was the Federation president.
I thought it was president of Earth, Vance was the guy representing Starfleet. And I thought she was the president of Earth. Maybe I'm wrong, but
Someone can tell us in the comments.
Either way, she was a high mucky muck, as they said.
I, I don't know why she was there. She should. I don't think she should have been there. Van certainly. It's a Starfleet matter. There was two other people there as well. And Burnham and Rayner getting grilled. But instead of apologising, Rayner going, Rakey, I know what I've done wrong. Sorry. He actually, we have a saying here. Don't back down, double down. Right? So the saying they have here in Scotland. Don't back down, double down. And he is. He's like, oh, I'm sick of this BS and this is politics. And Burnham's like, shut up, man. What are you doing? You're digging yourself a bigger hole.
Yeah, he's not helping himself. It's like,
really, no, man. It's not ideal. Certainly not ideal. But
I thought he was going to get thrown in the brig or something. I was waiting for it. Yeah. You know, because it didn't happen.
More than once, fans had to say, like, calm down. You're out of line. You know, Rayner, calm yourself down. But I kind of respect Rayner a little bit for just sticking to his guns. I'm not saying what he done was right, but he stuck to his guns and what he thought was right. So fair play to the guy. And I like this character. And I really, really do like this character. Yeah. My favourite character on this season so far. They get dismissed. They have a word with Burnham separately, privately. And then before we know it, Gray, black alert time again. Your favorite kind of alert.
However it goes, I don't.
Jesus, what was that? That sounded like an animal getting slowly strangled.
It sounds something like that. And in the meantime, every time that alarm goes off, they start waking up the hamsters and the spores and the mushrooms to get going.
Oh, it's going. Don't worry. After this season, we'll never see the spore drive again. Famous last words.
Yeah, or Discovery, but yeah.
The Discovery has to go and find the next clue, essentially. And they got a little clue before of twin moons, and they were able to line up. Because basically when they got that android, Fred, remember Fred? Rest in peace Fred. When he was beamed up and analysed, they were able to freeze frame what he saw, and there was a picture of where these twin moons were. They were able to ascertain where it was. Black alert there. Everything has to be bloody spore drive, man. Honestly, sometimes warp drive's okay, you know.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's another thing that ruins it, I think, for everyone else.
Well, that's because you never, you know, you want to see the ship flip around like this, you know, like it's so cool, you know.
Yeah, interesting. That's actually good. At later on in this episode, I think it was this episode, you see the inside view of when the spore drive activates or deactivates. Because all of a sudden you see the bridge, and then it looks like it's upside down, and then really quickly flips over. It looked weird.
And then you see a whole bunch of people start throwing up.
Yeah, you need the seasickness tablets for that. The space tablets. Great. I want your opinion on this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of money spent on these shows for the CGI, right? And we know the new thing in Hollywood is to have the screen or the wall, which is a CGI wall, and it can have a background in it, and that saves them building whole planet sets and whatnot. Saves a lot of money, very expensive to set up, but it works in the long run. However, while a lot of these sets are brilliant, I'm thinking of ones in space and stuff, like actual Discovery shots. See, when it comes to people standing in front of the CGI wall, some of the shots just look off, man. Like on the sand planet from the first episode, some of the shots where you saw like Rayner and Burnham, and you look at the background and it does not match or blend perfectly. Did you notice that? I'm really surprised, man, the amount of money.
Yeah, it almost looked like the background, while it was probably okay, when you have them in the foreground and you have sand going around, it almost looks like they just threw a bunch of sand in front of a fan, basically. And it doesn't kind of match what's going on exactly. In other words, it looks cheap. It looks cheapish.
Well, yeah, from the standards we're used to seeing, I'm surprised that looks a bit shit, if I'm being honest with you. And if someone wants to comment below and tell me if they agree or disagree with that, please do, because I think that's really, really weird.
They didn't have the budget of Dune, because Dune's got a lot of sand.
Dune is, well, what movie that is, Dune Part 2, by the way. Wow, go and see that, people. So yeah, the CGI a little bit funny in certain places. Maybe the budget was running out. I don't know. It's a very expensive show to do. So, and now we're on this planet, one of the twin moons. It's Burnham, it's Saru, and that's this is his last mission before he buggers off and does his, he gets that promotion that he's going to take. Right. And this is his last mission, and this is the sweet moment where him and Burnham literally have the kind of the little hug and, you know, one last dance, you lead the way, and it's really sweet, those two. We said before, we love these two characters, we love these two actors, they play off each other really well, Gray. And it's good to see. And they're on the planet, and the shit's hitting the fan right off the bat, pretty much. The security system's on that planet. We see literally like a big statue head that looked like something that had been knocked off.
There was a hand and a head.
It looked, do you know what it looked like? It looked like one of the Eternals from the Marvel.
Did
you think that as well? Definitely.
Eternals or the Celestials, whatever they call them. It's just,
and it's
I was kind of fully expecting one of them just gonna get up.
Well, one of them slightly does come to life. It's the the head that comes to life. It's just the eyes and the mouth and the orifices come to life, and all these drones come firing out, coming and smashing up Burnham and Saru big time. And they see the skeletons and stuff and the skulls on the ground, and they're like, uh-oh, this is a graveyard, man. No one survived this. Because the thing is, they can only take so many of these things down because they keep coming, and they're having to try and find a way of shutting them down. And that's when Tilly comes to save the day. So she does. So they're on Discovery. Tilly's there, Gray's there, not that Gray, the other Gray, the Trill Gray.
That Gray, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, the other, or maybe a different spelling of Gray. And then all of a sudden, Hollow Raynor appears. Like, I swear to God, Hollow Raynor just appears in the ship, even though he's been given into trouble. And he's helping him out straight away. I'm actually trying to give him pointers and advice on how to actually stop these drones, because he's got that kind of mind that's suited for this kind of mission. Makes me think he should have been there, actually, to be honest with you, Gray.
He was in a little trouble, maybe.
Well, just a little bit. So he couldn't go anywhere. He was probably stuck in his quarters. And that's some distance to beam your hologram, by the way. I'm just saying, that's impressive. Anyway.
Well, again, if we're 1,000 years... past probably the 22nd easy. Century, I could go along with some of that, so it's okay.
I don't fancy the internet bill after that one, though. So their plan is to use the good old, what did they call it? It's not a electropulse, I think?
Electromagnetic
That was their plan. They have to do that near the source, use their phaser, overpower it, or set it to blow up, basically, and it will... the pulse will take them out. But this was so you had Saru and Burnham fighting about who's going to be the decoy and who's going to be the one that runs to the statue and put the phaser in, and you're doing it, it's your last wish, no, you're the captain. Oh, Jesus Christ. And then basically it's Saru that's going to be the decoy because he is the faster runner. Now, Gray, I know they speed things up, obviously, but see when Saru starts running, Jesus Christ, man, that boy's quick. You see him?
Reminds me of the old Keystone Cop comedies of the 30s. No, not that bad. Well, the thing that I didn't know until this episode, I guess, was that Saru is much more agile, faster, and his reflexes are quicker than humans. Okay, along with that one.
Yeah. And it makes sense. This was his last mission with him, so Burnham didn't want him to do that, but it makes sense. He's the better person to be doing that. So he goes, but he does get hit. He does get hit in the shoulder at one point, so he's not, you know, he's fast, but he's not fast enough. Burnham gets to the statue in time, puts the phaser in, and at just the nick of time, literally, like, vaporizes and takes them out. But it was a close one, to be fair. And it's a nice scene. Like I say, we love these two characters. I like any chance to see those two together. I'm very, very happy with. But see, when the ship was about to hit the fan, Gray, you remember Saru uses the little quill things he has to...
Yeah.
Now, I thought... Right, couple of things about this. I thought that was cool that he was able to take them out. I thought that these things are... scales. They were able to take out drones. Really?
No.
Come on, man. But
first of all, like you said, I thought the Quills were gone. I thought they had an episode about that.
They were gone, man. Like, what?
So unless you and I missed something, and maybe we did, I don't understand where it came from in the first place.
Let's just say, for
argument's sake, you and I, we missed something somewhere. But I agree with you. As soon as those things fired and took out three drones with perfect aim, I'm going like, no, I don't think so.
Has he got like target sensors on these things, man? What the?
I fully expected the scales, and then what they should have done is had the Quills bounce off of them, and then he gets rescued in the nick of time right after that.
Yeah,
but to sit there and take all three out. Come on, it looks so comical. I was laughing.
It looked cool, but it wasn't. It didn't make sense. Yeah. That's smart, but what the hell? That doesn't. Yeah, what? Nah, that didn't make any sense. But
as soon as it happens, and you go cool, and then you start laughing because you're going like, yeah, like that'll happen.
I mean, they're far fetched, and like I said, he shouldn't have them anymore. So tell me, someone, why he has them now? What are we both missing here? That's what I want to know.
It must be. Wait, I know they're quantum quills. That must be it.
Quantum quills. What the actual.
That's the only reason I could think quantum of that would take quills. Out those probes. Got some quantum quills.
Oh man, right. You've been on the happy juice, man.
They should have made it. They should have colored blue or white like the real quantums.
Jesus Christ. Oh, man. Next there'll be bloody phaser quills, man. Jesus.
Oh god, that'll look even a dumber. Oh boy. Okay.
Right, moving on. So our man Book has a plan. I'm glad they're trying to make him more useful than just being the sidekick here so far. He has a plan to try and get Lack and Maul's attention, or two bad guys from the first episode. And he's obviously, Book is a courier from the past, not doing that anymore now, but he's known as a courier, so he needs to use his contacts and resources to get hold of them, and he does. He manages to do that. They mask their the equivalent of the communication IP, so no one knows where they're actually coming from. And they're doing that on their end as well on the enemy ship, so they try and track them down, but they can't. And it was a little bit of exchange between them, like, why should we trust you? Or because I want to buy this, and I know what it's like, I'm a courier, and who else are you going to get to buy this off you? That kind of thing. Now, I thought, I know, Gray, you mentioned here you weren't a massive fan of this, but I liked it because we kind of find out later on that Book recognizes Maul a little bit there, and he tries his best to play the courier card to try and get this more information out of them, and he's not ultimately that successful. Why were you not a massive fan of that part?
You mean the part where he just discovers it's this?
No, not quite. When he's chatting to them, you mentioned here that you've seen it coming a mile away, and it was.
Oh, right, writing. Right. Well, as soon as Booker, not even before he started talking, when he said he was going to contact him, I knew immediately what was going to happen, because it made sense to me, knowing the character. So I just felt that it was, while it was okay as far as the writing go, as far as what was going to happen, I thought the writing was a bit weak, because if you see it coming a mile away, man, that means you're not surprising anybody. Again, I would go back to Picard season 3. They were throwing stuff at us from left field, right field, and center field all the time. And we weren't picking up on everything. You know, I mean, we picked up on a couple things, but most things we didn't. We didn't know some of the stuff that was going to go in. They kept us guessing. Well, there was no guessing in this. I knew exactly what was going to happen. So it's kind of like,
I don't always have to be surprised, Gray. It's nice sometimes. No, but I don't need to be that surprised.
I don't mind that. I agree with you, but it just was so obvious. It was like too obvious. I guess what it's going
to
try.
So Gray likes to be surprised. Noted. I will try and jump scare him whenever I can, and make him shit himself wherever I possibly can. he likes surprises, after all.
All of a sudden, you appear behind me, right over here.
That would be hilarious. Saru, you didn't update that spelling, Gray. Oh, you're slacking. Oh, a couple of spells. Oh, man, there's several times I put that. Oh, well. Anyway, Saru and Burnham get another clue just before the security system takes them out. They're basically, at first they can't actually see anything on the kind of statues they come up against, but or the runes, but Saru's got better, different vision from humans, so he actually sees indentations on the statues, and over time, this little kind of organic kind of moss stuff's grown on it that can he can almost read because it's his eyesight can pick it up.
The bacteria had bioluminescence, right? Which was cool. I thought that was pretty cool.
Science, I like man. That. Science,
yeah. Exactly what little bit they use in Discovery, they find, you know, it makes sense now.
They've used up the quota now, man.
But that was I thought that was a little thing that was actually brilliant, because that's what Star Trek's about, trying to use as much real science as possible. Yeah. And so that little bit meant that some writer got it right.
So
that was cool.
The thing is, they're up against the clock because all these the drones are rebooted and they're literally coming back. But they're a bit further in the planet, so they've got like a few minutes kind of thing, and they're trying to find more clues. And the clue's basically saying, "Look at the back." So they kind of look at the back, but it's like underneath. So Saru uses, and he comes to the rescue again. He's got all these things that are better. He's able to push the statue away a little bit so he can actually see a clue underneath. They get the clue just in the nick of time. Managed to beam out there just before they're kind of vaporized. It's a little part of a actual physical little element that they pull out the ground, little piece. And they're able to use, well, that's the cool thing about the 32nd century, Grey, that from the still shots they've got from Fred, again, rest in peace Fred and Fred Jr.'s rest in peace, they're able to freeze frame many things. So they've got this piece and they see that it can be part of it fits into this little round circle, and they make the round circle from programmable matter. Programmable matter is easily the coolest thing of the 32nd century, and it makes sense to me in a logical, scientific future way.
Sure.
They literally have this panel in front of them where the Elcars would be, where they literally, there's a picture of what they want. It's like a 3D printer, really fast 3D printer.
Yeah, exactly.
Prints them out the part. They put the piece into it, and they see that there's space for another four pieces. So we have a round bit with a total of five pieces that go in the middle. They found the first piece, and now let's Indiana Jones the shit out of the next four pieces. Their next clue leads them to the planet Trill, which we've seen in Discovery before. Was it season 3 when they went up to the 32nd century? I think it was.
Don't remember.
Rings a bell. Yeah, because they have, because Grey's, or Grey's symbiont at least is Trill, so we have been to the planet Trill, which is kind of cool. I'd like to see Trill wherever possible. It's a cool species. So four more parts for another 8 episodes. Yes, that's doable. Yeah. But we find out there was a bit more to the meeting than we first thought between Book, Maul, and Lack. Book freeze frames their meeting, and he zooms in on Maul, and he asks the computer to de-age her to about, I don't know, like 7 years old or something like that.
Yeah.
And then he recognizes the look of horror on his face. He's like, I recognize her. Her name is actually Malene, and it turns out she's the daughter of Book's mentor. I was like, oh, da, da, da. I thought that bit was cool, Grey, but what's your thoughts there when it came to that revelation? I thought I was smart.
It was okay. I wasn't disappointed with it.
It gives Book something more useful, and gives him more of a useful link to this. It gives Maul a bit more of an angle than just one of the bad guys. Because being a bad guy is not enough for me in Star Trek now. You need to be more than that. You know, better writing to make this character really
good. Gotta be multifaceted. Season 3 in Picard.
That's it. Well, listen, stop comparing everything to Picard season 3. We'll never get that again. I can't help it. No.
Between that and the Expanse, I can't help it. Those are good examples.
Oh, the Expanse, so good. So good. Really. Let's give us a 6th season, please, or 7th season, whatever we were. Anyway, so yeah, Saru leaves the Discovery.
This is the Ross and Annie.
And we're all very sad that Saru's leaving, because we love Saru. both.
No, I can't leave. No, please.
I know. He'll pop up somehow, but I'm not really sure how he'll pop up, but he will pop up.
Well, the way it seemed to me, the way they were talking, I was a little confused because they had said before that Saru was going to come with them on this last mission, and then now he's saying goodbye.
That mission was literally not the whole season. Last mission. That was about that much. But he'll obviously be involved somehow. We don't know, but he has to.
Yeah, he'll be back. He'll be back in some manner, somehow.
Here's where it gets a little bit interesting, because Vance, Admiral Vance, asks Rayner, who is his friend of 30 years, by the way, we find that out, which is really interesting, to take an early retirement. In fact, I shouldn't do air brackets. It makes it sound like he should throw himself upon his sword. It wasn't like that at all. Just early retirement. And I'm thinking and saying here, this is going to come back and bite him on the arse, potentially, because I thought Rayner was going to go off in the angle of a bad guy, potentially, at one point, Gray, because of his
Or maybe
demeanor.
Going off as a private detective kind of thing to do his own
That's
whatever.
True. That could have worked
I thought that might happen. I wasn't suspecting what happened next, so...
I didn't expect that. I thought it was very cool. We at this point, when I noted this down, I was thinking his behaviors are, because I thought he was Romulan at one point, which he isn't. But it didn't seem, he seemed more human, and is because I this time I thought he was part of Navarre humans, sort of Romulans, and Vulcans. And I thought his behavior seemed more human than usual. And I'm glad we cleared that up, Gray, because the fact that he's a Kelloran from Deep Space Nine episode in there, different species with a pointed ears, makes sense. His behavior actually adds up more now, or matches more his species, just happens to have pointed ears. So what we find out at the end... Burnham beams over to I don't know where it is. I'm assuming it's Antares, maybe, because you see Discovery in front, or it was Starfleet HQ. Because you see
it was Starfleet
in the
HQ.
Window.
Yeah,
you see Discovery in the front window, and they're having a heart to heart, and between the two, and you done this, and I done that, and you were right, and you were wrong, and blah blah blah. He's gutted because that was his life, and he doesn't have regrets about what he done. He's true to himself, and I respect that, even if it's the wrong thing. And he doesn't really know what to do with himself, because he's been given the sack, basically, effectively.
Yeah.
But then Burnham says, Starfleet's your life, I can see that. And I see the kind of person you are, you're very good at your job. She says, I would like you to be my number one. I was like, huh? What? He's been sacked. So he's been sacked from Starfleet. He's not been demoted. He's been sacked at early retirement. Mm-hmm. Why was this okay, and why would he accept a demotion?
Well, Burnham, and I'm not sure where this is coming from, but Burnham said that she was allowed to pick whomever she wanted.
No, but I'm initially thinking that, Gray. Obviously, we come to the revelation of what happens, which is
right.
She's already ran it past Vance, who said it was okay. He's like, well, that won't be allowed. I've been sacked. I've already spoken to Vance. He actually thought it was a good idea. I don't know if he said he suggested it, but you're right. She's allowed to pick a new number one because Saru's going away.
I did think that was a wee bit too easy, though. You would think there would have to be some kind of protocol.
Yes,
maybe.
He's been demoted. He's no longer captain, man. That's hard. That's fair. I think it's fair.
Because technically, yeah. I mean, I liked the whole idea. I wasn't suspecting she was going to get him for a number one. But you don't want to know something that I thought was very original series kind of thing coming back? I don't know if you picked up on it. But there was a part where Rayner turns to Burnham and says, I'm not a yes man. And she goes, that's exactly what I expect.
Good, yes.
So who is the person who was not a yes man in the original series?
Oh, Kirk was that as well.
No.
He wasn't. Yes.
No. But he's not a captain.
True.
Dr. McCoy. That's the exact role of McCoy, because McCoy was always between Spock and Kirk all the time. And he was the one that gave totally different opinions about lots of things, which is why Kirk liked him and was his good friend. I saw that same vibe going on. I can see it. I can see the reason why they took Rayner and put him in this position. Now, that could mean some really cool stuff between Burnham and Rayner if they write it correctly.
Oh, there will be. So they're very different characters, very much.
Right,
so.
And I think that's brilliant because if they truly handle it the proper way, like they did with the original three, the big three, then this could be interesting. Could be good. So I really, really hope they're taking that and running with it because they could do some really cool stuff. If they turn it into a bunch of garbage, I'll be angry.
I love Rayner. I said before, I'll say it again, he's my favorite character so far of the new characters. In fact, he's my favorite character full stop. He mm-hmm. could do, I think he's designed to be a number one because he was a slightly too reckless to be a captain. I think he'll fit in really, really well. The whole thing is, it's kind of demotion, but he was asked to take early retirement, which means he leaves Starfleet. It doesn't mean he gets knocked out of rank like Admiral Kirk. It means he is left, but then he's coming then back in to Starfleet as a number one. So did he ever leave? Was he just given a demotion? I think that's probably what's happened. He's given a demotion, which is fair and reasonable for what he done. He disobeyed orders before. He was reckless. So this is excellent. And you're right, Gray. I'm glad you remember that point. I'm not a yes man. Burnham's like, I'm counting on that. You need your yin to your yang. You can't have someone that knows it all. Otherwise, I think when Rayner was captain of the Antares, he was the yes man. Everyone, even his number one, probably said yes, sir, all the time. He probably didn't have anyone to counter him. So this is going to be a really good angle. I just don't know. What do you think Saru's going to do then? How often do you think we'll see him?
They have to still keep him involved somehow. Although it looks like he may not be in as many episodes as we think, but there's going to be some connection where he's going to be helpful in some other way.
I'm going to be sad if we get to the end of this and it finishes, and I think Rayner and Burnham are bloody excellent. I wish I had a sixth season. That will annoy me because now we're getting good writing and characters.
Happen. Everybody said the same thing about the Enterprise, the series. It started to become good the fourth year, and then it's gone.
because they had, and it's gone.
Right, because they couldn't do the first 3 years, and then they finally got it right. You know, so what can you do?
Yeah, guys, it's kind of like, this episode was a little bit shorter. I mean, there was a bit of action in it. It just kind of seemed to zoom past a bit quicker. I don't write down as many notes as I used to. I don't want to. This might be the kind of more normal length episode going forward, to be honest.
Right, but we talk a lot.
No, that's fine. It's a podcast, though. It's not just a review. This is the thing. Right. I've got this page. This second episode of notes is like half a page, three quarters of a page, where it used to be like two or three pages long.
I think it works because the first episode was a bit longer, number one.
Yeah,
but number two, the first episode was the first episode.
It was the last episode was longer. It was over an hour because it was the series was coming back and we were a bit excited and there was a lot more to build up actually to what we're talking
about. Yeah, it was setting up a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, in the first one. So more to talk about in that respect.
So we're back to normal episode three on Thursday. So we will try and do Thursdays if we can. That's subject to availability. It might be the Friday. But usually it's within a day or two. We usually try and put the episodes up. But yeah, of course, getting the paperwork out of the way. We are available on audio podcast platforms as well. And if you're listening to the audio podcast side, join us on YouTube if you want. We've got a whole new backdrop and we look a lot better than we did before. Honest. And that's not a filter we've got in Grey. He does actually look like that, honestly. So yeah, and Grey's got a show as well, Grey's Green Room. We'll be actually back for an episode next week. That's entertainment focused, so you'll like that if you like this, because while we don't really mention Star Trek, we mention a lot of cool things, you know, science fiction, a lot of superhero stuff, action movies, TV shows that are out. We talk about that stuff with our friends. So and lastly, we do a gaming podcast as well, and the Discord for that's in the description below. Please go to that. That's the key link, because we have a Trekway room in there to talk about Star Trek. We have Grey's Green Room to talk about entertainment stuff. And the Discord in general is about gaming. We have a gaming podcast every Thursday for that as well. So if you go to the link, you can chat to us about any of those subjects I mentioned. And we will be back next week. So wait, thank you.
Before we go, one thing we forgot.
Oh, we forgot to the score. Yeah. Yes. Okay, great.
I went 7 out of 10.
Yes. Why?
And Trev went.
I went 7 out of 10 as well. Yeah. Interesting.
No, I felt it was definitely better than the first episode because it just seemed, the pacing seemed to be all of a sudden better. Things seem to start making a wee bit more sense. So, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see where it goes.
Well, I had 7.5 out of 10 for the first episode and 7 here. Slightly less because there was slightly less action. I like both. I like my action and my good writing as well. And I know Gray didn't like the starships nose diving into the planet, but I thought that was bloody cool. I just suspended belief for a moment and I was like, yeah, that's the half a point just for that bit.
Oh, okay.
That's why. If you
I mean, I thought it was a great scene.
I know, it wasn't realistic and... Yeah.
Or at least not realistic enough, but yeah.
Can you imagine if the starship just went in, right? Imagine they just made an arse of it and they went in. And it just went doink and kind of bounced off, or something happened. It just made you know, the boink noise you get in cartoons, man, when you hit something. If you just done that,
and then it fell on the city, and everybody got demolished anyway. Oops,
I'm sure you can add sound effects to TikTok and YouTube shorts. I could put a boink noise in there, I'm sure. Yeah, thank you very much, guys. We will be back again for episode 3, and at some point, we'll do some live YouTube stuff of Star Trek Resurgence that we've been playing recently. Until the next time, Gray, do your thing, my man.
Live long and prosper, everybody.
Bye. Bye-bye.